Fasten your seatbelt, turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. I'm Glenn Mobert. Today on Route 51, we look at the challenges and opportunities facing central Wisconsin as we focus on how one county in our state is coping with a long list of questions in a changing society and a depressed economy. Our guests, Marathon County Administrator Brad Carter and Board Supervisor Keith Langenhahn. The list of problems facing Marathon County leaders includes the effects of the Great Recession, high unemployment despite a diversified economy, the need to attract and retain young professionals and the businesses that employ them, chronic and worsening jail overcrowding on a scale that threatens to break the county budget. Also, the culture of alcohol consumption. That's a major factor in the crime rate that's filling those jail cells. Declining tax revenue for all levels of government, state, county, municipal, and for our public schools. And the struggling dairy farms that were once the backbone of the regional economy. We've got some things on the plus side of the ledger, too. A high quality of life, a low violent crime rate, a thriving arts scene, great local schools, and help for those struggling farmers through the Dairyland State Academy. There's also an increased awareness of the problems of heavy alcohol consumption and a move to rebrand the county in order to better market its assets. What do you think the greatest problems facing central Wisconsin are? How would you solve them? Is local government broken? Is the county board too big and too unwieldy? We'll be talking about that, too. This is your show. Give us a call at 261-6371. That's 261-6371 if you're in the Marathon County area, or 1-800-780-9742, anywhere that you're listening. Brad Carter and Keith Langenhahn, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thank you.
I'd like to start off by asking each of you, and we'll start with you, Brad. What do you think the biggest problem facing the county is right now, if you had to pick just one?
If I had to pick one, the biggest threat, I guess I'd recharacterize it a little bit, is really the potential that we're going to have to expand that jail. That is such a huge financial burden with no outside funding source that I think it's the one thing that's kind of hanging out there as a major threat that we constantly have to be thinking about.
Keith, would you agree?
I think at this point in time, I would think that one of the biggest issues that we have is unemployment and the environmental financial conditions out there. With Colby & Colby with huge layoffs.
Green Heck
and these companies with huge layoffs, I think is a major issue right now, and it's something that I sure hope turn around soon.
And let's look at the other side of the ledger. Would each of you like to name a positive development that you think is happening in the county right now? Brad?
Well, let me think here a minute. I think that really we have a very – we stand on the shoulders of people who came about before us. We really have a vibrant downtown Wausau. We have progressive communities. We have a lot of talent in the community. There's a lot of entertaining things to do here that I enjoy and I know a lot of other people enjoy. So I think that, you know, especially when you compare it to other areas in central and northern Wisconsin, we have a lot of assets that don't exist elsewhere.
Keith?
I would have to agree very much with that. And I think the one of the most exciting things that I see happening is we have fractions from different areas coming together with wanting a brand new area and bring young people to town and to grow our metropolitan area here. So I see that as a very exciting thing right now.
Well, let's start off with the effects of the Great Recession. Our local unemployment rate is 12% in Wausau, according to the Department of Workforce Development, compared to about 9% statewide. Mm-hmm. What's a real unemployment rate? Do you think that's accurate?
I think it's probably 50% higher than that, because I think there are discouraged workers, and I think there are people that just somehow just don't show up on that roll. So I think it's tremendously high.
And you've got the underemployed, too.
Yes. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of people that are only they're considered employed, but they're only working 24 or 32 hours a week right now. They have shortened work weeks and things like that. So it's probably higher than 12%, yes.
We have a diversified economy. We've got a lot of different industries. We've got a tourism industry. We've got restaurants. We've got all kinds of different things. That's supposed to shield you from high unemployment even during economic downturns, but it's not working this time.
Well, it shields you if there's a downturn in a specific industry, but when there's a downturn in almost every industry, it doesn't help as much. Because a lot of things like, well, if paper went down, which it, you know, has in various times, when you have paper mills, but you have other things, those other things aren't impacted. But this is more of a general malaise that we have going, and I think it's impacted so many industries. The other piece that you have to keep in mind is a lot of our manufacturing is associated with construction. You know, those are making windows and those are making homes and stuff like that. We call it manufacturing, but it's really about construction.
Right.
And that doubles it up.
So true. And with a lot of these workers not working, I think that's why your restaurants and your fast foods and all of those types of businesses are noticing that, because people aren't on the run as much. They can enjoy making a meal at home instead of having to eat a burger on the run. So
you see a lot of people out on Lake Wausau catching their own food in those ice shanties, too. But the construction industry has really been a hammer for us this time around. We have the foreclosure problem. We've got the entire bottom dropping out of the housing market. And you're right, Brad, that affects things like the windows that Colby & Colby manufactures. And it just Wausau Homes is having problems, too.
The lumber businesses, Menzo Lumber.
What's the way out? Is there any solution beyond just waiting for the general economy to improve, which is not going to happen fast?
If I were to answer that, I would say that there's not that much we're going to be able to do with regard to impacting the economy for the next 3 to 5 years. But we can start to think about the next 15 to 20 years, and we have to start to position ourselves for the industries and the jobs that really don't exist yet. And start to think about what those jobs are going to be, and rather than just trying to hang on to industries that may not have a future, start to figure out where the future is going to be and create those niches and try to develop the entrepreneurs that are willing to target those areas.
How do you figure out what that's going to be?
Well, it's not easy. One person doesn't do it. What you do is you talk to the people who are in the field, try to figure out where the industry is going, try to figure out how that might be supported by technology, and figure out where there's a niche, because the industries that are dependent on commodity prices are really depressed, right, Keith?
Yeah.
You know, you got to be able to find a niche where you can kind of charge what, at least make up your cost of production and try to make some money at it. And you got a combined high educated workforce to go with it.
Is there an effort right now, a comprehensive effort underway in the county to determine where those expanding areas of the new economy is going to be?
We did have a task force, and they worked on trying to identify issues like that. And one of the things that I think all units of government are, you know, interested in doing is to have a good infrastructure here and a good education system here. Because if people are interested in coming here, them are very important items that they would like to see before they bother setting up a business or want to grow a business here. So that's something that we can continually work hard on, and at the same time try to identify those types of businesses and bring them to this area.
Well, we've got public schools that are highly rated in Marathon County. We've got voters who more often than not seem to approve referendums for those schools. We just had one pass in Edgar. We had a referendum a few years ago that built that new high school for Wausau East. We have UW-Marathon County, where we're broadcasting right now. We've got North Central Technical College. We've got UW-Stevens Point just to the south. It seems like we've got a lot of good things going as far as education is concerned.
We have a very excellent area for education. We have good cooperations between the schools, between the UWMC here, where we are broadcasting, and North Central Technical College. The cooperation between those two colleges has never in my lifetime been better that I have noticed. And another big item that we have here beyond education is our excellent road system. We have the crossroads here with 29 and 51, and it's for transporting product in and out. You couldn't have a better location.
And we've got that new interchange, and the fact that 29 and 51 now are both four lanes. And for a long time during Wausau's history, that wasn't the case. You know, Wausau was kind of, Marathon County was a difficult place to get to. And I got the feeling that a lot of the city and county leaders in years past kind of preferred it that way.
Could be.
Possible.
What about the social safety net, the things that help people who are unemployed, who are hit by this this downturn? Is it adequate to help the people who don't have enough food, people who might have lost their medical insurance through unemployment? Now, we've got a couple of great hospitals with emergency rooms. We've got the Marshfield Clinic. We've got all of these satellite clinics. Do we have enough things in place to help people who, you know, quite frankly, might not have a lot of money to get by on right now?
That is a pretty global question. So, there, you know, generally speaking, I would say that we do a majority of the work through our economic support unit, and we, of course, provide, used to be called food stamps, now it's called something else, I can't think of it right this moment. We provide, we don't provide what people used to call welfare anymore. We have Wisconsin Works, and basically it provides you access to a job and job training. But this whole healthcare issue is another very difficult issue. There is an assumption by some that anybody who has a health care need here in Marathon County gets that issue resolved. And I'm not sure that you could make that broad a statement. I think that the Marshfield Clinic has a great reputation for taking in people who cannot pay for their own care. And I think other agencies do too, but I'm particularly noticed Marshfield Clinic does that. But I do think there are people who fall between the gaps and don't get the kind of preventive care that they need that they would have had they had health care coverage. I'm currently teaching a class at Upper Iowa, and we have students out interviewing employers in the area talking about the future of health care, and they just presented their papers last night. And so many of them reported that the smaller employers are saying that they are at their wits' end, and the only thing they can think of at this point is to drop providing health care to their employees. The other piece that they indicated was that they were interviewing them about what they expected from the federal level in terms of relief, in terms of how they provide health care to the employees, and they were all very, one, unclear of what's even being discussed, two, had an expectation it would probably raise costs and help someone else, but it really wouldn't do much in terms of cost containment for their employees.
Well, a lot of these things don't have local solutions. They've got national solutions if they've even got that. But you're right about small businesses. Small businesses cannot afford to insure their people anymore. And Keith, you know a lot of people in the dairy industry, a lot of small farmers who are in the same boat.
There's a lot of farmers that don't have any health insurance at all at this time. Or also what has happened about 15, 20 years ago, a lot of spouses went out and got a job where health insurance was provided because already at that time they could not afford to buy health insurance. There were people 10 years ago already in the dairy industry that were paying $1,200, $1,300 a month for a family health insurance plan. And because dairy and farming is considered a pretty unhealthy job. I mean, it's high risk. You can get injured real easy.
Yeah.
Health insurance is quite costly for farmers. So one or the other, either the husband or the wife, ended up going to town getting a job in most cases where health insurance was provided.
A lot of people are working in jobs just in order to get the health insurance.
Yes.
When maybe they'd like to be an entrepreneur, start their own business, or spend full time on the farm doing the things that they love. Let's talk about the Dairyland State Academy. Very briefly, we'll touch on it now. We'll come back to it later. But we were talking about how education is really the key to a lot of these things and a lot of the future economic growth in Marathon County. How is the academy coming along?
It's moving along very well at this time. About 6-7 years ago, a task force was put together, and the number one item was that there needed to be a facility or organization that would basically connect retiring farmers with young people interested in the business. And this is where Dairyland State Academy conception came from. And at this time, there has been land purchased about a mile and a half north of the North Central Technical College campus. They are basically working to get the technology to the site at this time. Case IH, large manufacturer agriculture equipment, has verbally committed a 10-year commitment to provide tractors, combines, and machinery to the site. They will exchange the equipment each year. There will be new tractors and equipment there, with the equipment that was used the last year going to dealers to be sold to other farmers. The fundraising is beginning very shortly, and it's moving along. We're expected to open with students on site mid to later fall.
So it's coming right up. I'll tell you what, I'm going to take a quick break, and we'll come back and talk about that in a little more detail right now, talk about exactly what hope it offers for people who are on small family farms or who want to continue a family farming tradition. We're talking about the challenges and opportunities facing central Wisconsin and specifically Marathon County with County Administrator Brad Karger and Board of Supervisors Chairman Keith Langenhahn. We'd like to hear from you, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network.
Support for WPR comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
The Cripple of Inishman, a dark comedy set in Ireland, will be performed by the UW Marathon County Theater March 3rd through the 5th, and again on March 7th. UWMC is located at 518 South 7th Avenue in Wausau. Tickets at 261-6230.
Your business can reach an audience like no other in Wisconsin by supporting programming on Wisconsin Public Radio. For more information about business sponsorships, call Rick Ryer at 1-800-749-3906.
Our forecast for north central Wisconsin: clear and cold tonight, winds out of the northwest, a low of 4 below zero. Friday, mostly sunny, a high of 32, a low of 14. Saturday, mostly cloudy, maybe a few flurries, a high of 35. Sunday, continued cloudy, a slight chance of light snow with a high again of 35 degrees. We've got clear skies across north central Wisconsin, 24 in Marshfield, Wausau, and Eagle River, 25 in Rapids, Antigo, and Rhinelander, 27 in Tomahawk and Medford, 28 degrees in Stevens Point. 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. If you'd like to join the conversation with Marathon County Administrator Brad Karger and Board Supervisor Keith Langenhahn. Keith, what can people get out of the Dairyland State Academy? What need does it fill? Who is actually going to be taking courses there?
Well, it'll be students coming out of agricultural programs in high school that possibly want to purchase a farm, either a beef or dairy farm, and continue in the farming and business. But also, there was a need in the Marathon County area for people in the agronomy business and in the feed business, for people that for work counters and work in these organizations, that they needed some training, and actually they didn't possibly need 4 years of training at UW River Falls or the like. So
why is this so necessary? Most people learn farming from mom and dad on the farm. Why do you need some high-tech dairy academy in order to provide education for people who used to get it from mom and dad?
Well, there's a couple different reasons. What we have seen, because dairying and agriculture hasn't been very profitable and hasn't been a good business to possibly get into for the last 20 years, a lot of parents have promoted their children to get higher education and do something other than to take over the family farm. I think there were even cases out there where parents didn't even allow their children to be interested in farming. And what we've seen...
And how do you feel about that as a dairy farmer yourself?
Well, I operate a dairy farm that's been a family since 1878, and I guess I always feel that there's hope that the business will turn around, be much more profitable, and I'm a huge promoter of dairy farming. I think there is a future in it, and... I sure hope there is. I have a son that's farming with us, and I hope that him and his family can always make a living there.
Well, Wisconsin's known as America's Dairyland, and Marathon County is the county that you most associate with dairy farming in the state, and it's got to hurt when you see the troubles that dairy farmers are experiencing right now.
Yes, but that's why there was a need for this school, and the results that came out of that task force told us that.
This is a collaboration with North Central Technical College and who else?
University of Wisconsin University System, the Marathon County campus here, UWMC, UW Extension, and then the four-year college.
And you're going to have actual dairy herds on this farm?
Yes, there will be approximately 50 cows on the farm. There will be two herds. One will be a grazing herd, and the other will be a confined herd. And the plan right now is to have robotic milking with some of the animals and parlor milking for the rest of the animals. Robotic milking is probably the future, but at the same time, there is only one farm in Marathon County that has robotic milking right now. So if you truly want students to be able to match up with retiring farmers, you do have to teach both styles of milking.
Who's paying for all of this?
Well, we're looking for, like what happened with Case IH, we're looking for a lot of companies to come forward and put their equipment in there to showcase it. And we will be out raising money to basically finish the project of what we can't get from suppliers and vendors in order to finish up the project.
And you could not only get a degree from this institute, but you can get some practical hands-on learning.
The hands-on learning is what we're showcasing. There's three or four times the amount of students in the program today as what there was when they started the program at NTC approximately 3 years ago. They're getting many calls from throughout the state. They've even had some calls from students that were interested from outside the United States. And we plan on showcasing it to many other states that are growing in the dairy business. And also, at the same time, if a student goes through the course at North Central Technical College and find that they have an interest in pursuing a profession in agriculture, such as to become an animal doctor or veterinarian, their credits are transferable to River Falls or to other colleges, and that's
so
the important part.
This seems to be an idea that has addressed a problem, and it's working. It's providing some solutions.
Yes.
When we come back, we're going to talk about some other problems facing the county, notably the overcrowded jail and what possible solutions we have to that. 261-6371, 1-800-780-9742. We'll be back after this.
WPR comes from the Milwaukee Public Museum, hosting the exhibit Dead Sea Scrolls and the Bible, Ancient Artifacts, Timeless Treasures, featuring real scrolls, New Testament papyri, and early Bibles that tell a story two millennia long. Info at mpm.edu.
We're back on Route 51, Regional Talk Radio on the Ideas Network, looking at the challenges and opportunities facing central Wisconsin, specifically Marathon County, with County Administrator Brad Carter and Board Supervisor, Chairman of the Board of Supervisors, Keith Langenhahn. We've been talking about a lot of things, gentlemen. I want to really focus on one issue that a lot of people have strong opinions on, and that's jail overcrowding. So let me get those numbers out if you've got an opinion on that. 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. And, Brad, jail overcrowding is a problem that not only affects Marathon County, it affects a lot of counties in central Wisconsin. Portage County is having problems as we speak. Why do we no longer have enough cells to house prisoners?
Well, that's a very complicated question, but it goes really back to the roots of our society. I know that I can tell you from our inmate population that the vast majority are between ages 17 and 29, and they're male. And I've been working for Marathon County for 22 years. So the question is, what has happened in the last 17 years that resulted in so many young men having to be incarcerated in this facility? I think there are a multitude of answers. A couple of years ago, we had the special education department bring their faculty in and interview inmates just to learn more about them. And we were actually looking for low academic achievement, maybe a high population of special education students, but we did not find that. What we found is the common thread is that overwhelming percentage of them reported that they never had any positive contact with their father in their life.
Wow.
So that's something I think a lot of people know, but the media hasn't covered very well. It's not a problem that government caused, and it's not a problem that government's going to solve.
What kind of problems are these young men getting into?
First of all, let me tell you that the hard sells are somewhere between 20 and 30%. These are the deeper end of the population, are OWIs, repeat OWIs. The alcohol and drug issue, but particularly the alcohol issue, is really driving, I think, the increase in the jail population to a great extent. Let me just give you some history on the jail population. I came here in 1988 to start to work for the county, and we were still at Bella Street. And we housed somewhere near to 50 inmates at that time. Then we built downtown, which meant a big controversy, and we had an expanded facility where we could comfortably house 150. 10 years later, we doubled the facility, 1998, to house 300. In between 98 and 2008, we developed the alternatives program, and now every day there are 600 people in some form of county supervision. So this problem is escalating at a very high rate, and it is not a problem that's confined to Marathon County. It is a statewide issue.
You keep building more jails, more jail cells, and you keep filling them. I hate to be a little flippant here, but it's almost like a reverse field of dreams. If you build it, they will come. You've been filling these jails up, and what's the solution? We want to build another one now.
We just recently had a federal government audit, and they, first of all, they identified that Marathon County has a lot of positives in its criminal justice system. They identified that the parties work well together, that they have respect for each other, and that they're trying to do the right thing to protect public safety in the community and to not over harshly sentence people, but to really correct their behavior. What they said we need to do better is to get some common assessment instruments and deliver to the population of offenders the right intervention at the right time targeted to them, not an across-the-board kind of intervention. So there won't be, according to this report, in my belief, a single answer. You need to assess a person's motivation. You need to assess their maturity. You need to assess what their needs are and deliver a evidence-based intervention that's likely to have a positive response.
If we were to build a new jail, how much would it cost? And how would it impact tax rates?
Okay, here's what I think it would cost. The last study, the Kimmy study, which I believe is 2 years old, said it would cost $40 million to build and $4 million a year to operate. Not the whole jail, just the expansion. Let me give you an example of how big that is. If I, in order to operate it, forget about paying off the capital, just the $4 million annual, and that will go on forever. If I completely defunded the Marathon County Parks Department, didn't put a single dollar into it, completely defunded the Marathon County Veterans Service Office, completely defunded the University of Wisconsin Extension Division, and completely defunded our Conservation, Planning, and Zoning Department, I would have $30,000 I didn't know what to do with.
If we built a new jail.
If we built a new jail. That's what we have to give up. There is no new funding source. We would be forced to cannibalize the programs that deliver the quality of life that people enjoy here.
Is public safety at risk if we don't build a new jail?
Well, that's a very complicated question. I think I'd be hard-pressed to say yes. I think we need to... let me just give you some context, too, and that is the county doesn't decide who goes to jail. we don't decide who commits a crime. We mostly don't arrest people. It's mostly municipal arrests.
And you don't decide who gets prosecuted.
We don't conduct the hearing. We don't decide who's prosecuted. We don't decide who's found guilty.
You don't do the sentencing.
Once they're sentenced, we have to find a place for them. Okay? And right now, we found a place in about 270 in alternatives, 300 in our jail, and 30 in Shawano. So whether we would be... I really, to be honest with you, I'd be hard-pressed to say if we built a new jail, anybody would be any safer in our community.
Keith Longenhahn, do you agree with that assessment?
I don't think that it would increase the safety of the county at all, because we are basically providing a cell for everyone that is ordered to be in a cell, whether it be, as Brad mentioned earlier, in Shawano County, and we also have cells available in Lincoln County. So I don't think a jail... A new jail here would do anything besides to strap people tax-wise.
Is there any serious consideration at this point in time by the county board of building a new jail?
Well, there was talk about when times were better, about possibly putting some money aside for design, and but hasn't really resurfaced. They're doing some hearings around the county right now to... find out to get some public input on other drug and alcohol programs that hopefully can help as to how often people repeat offend and are back in the jail. We're trying all kinds of different angles. So.
17 to 24-year-old men.
29.
Mm-hmm. And they don't have, most of them don't have a father figure in their lives.
Right.
And alcohol is a huge problem. Brad, you've been here for, you know, a couple of decades in county government. Keith, you've lived here your whole life. What's changed? Is a higher percentage of these young people screwing up, or are we just getting more serious about prosecuting them?
I believe we're probably more serious about prosecuting them. We have other methods of catching them, because... I believe this culture has always been in Wisconsin, and I don't
You're
think...
You're talking about the alcohol culture.
The alcohol culture, right. And I think, if anything, as I remember back to high school days and now with having a son in high school, I almost think they have they avoid alcohol more today, and they basically get a lot more education to the effects of alcohol. But I just think that they're getting caught a lot easier on the roads and now with breathalyzers and things like that. Years ago, local officers used to take the children or the kids, yeah, teenagers or whatever, home to the parents, and the parents handled it. And now they bring them into juvenile detention and into the jails, and we have to have a cell for them.
Well, they were even more lenient on older adults who got caught driving drunk. They'd give them a ride home or... Yes. You know, look the other way. But you see these people who have their fifth, sixth, seventh OWIs. Why can't we address this culture? Why can't we change these behavior patterns?
And I think we are making an attempt to do that. And that's why we're having these hearings. And we want to start some programs, but we want to make sure we start the right programs. And that's why we're going around trying to get public input. We had a hearing a week and a half ago out in the town of Marathon. One was held Wednesday night out in town of Ringel. And there will be one in Wausau. So we're addressing the issue.
A culture does not change in a year. Culture changes a matter of decades. Just think about smoking. How long has it been since people really knew the cigarettes were killing you? And you see the
1964
smoking,
is when that label came on the cigarette packs.
You see the rates go down. You see social acceptability going down. There are some blips now with some young people still starting up, but generally the trend is down. When I came to Marathon County, people were smoking in their offices. So changing the culture is not going to happen quickly, but I do believe that we have to change our culture around alcohol here. And one of the things that I'm a little bit critical of is the Life Report and other things have identified the real issue is alcoholism or alcohol abuse. I believe the issue is broader than that. That is a culture that promotes and accepts the use of alcohol at sporting events, at family events, at business events. I think if you focus on people who've already gotten in trouble associated with alcohol, that's an easy way to say everybody needs to change but me. My evidence for that is most of the most serious accidents that resulted in a fatality were OWIs, were people who had not offended prior to this date. So if we could turn the needle in a positive direction, there would be so many positives in terms of public safety. The other thing that we see from a county's perspective is the impact of alcohol on child welfare. Children being neglected, children not all kinds of offenses against children, violence against children. They tend to be in families where their alcohol is also an issue. Now, we intervene in the extremes, but my belief is that in a culture which uses alcohol or accepts a lot of alcohol use is not a healthy environment to raise children in. And I'm not advocating no use of alcohol. I'm advocating trying to take that needle and turn it down. I would not start with a prohibition. And to be honest, we've got grants and stuff. We're going to start by educating children. My belief is community leaders ought to start by setting positive role models themselves, changing their own behavior and asking people to follow suit.
Brad Carter and Keith Langenhahn, two of the leaders of Marathon County, and we are talking about a number of issues, but the one that impacts the county most right now is this jail overcrowding issue and the problem of alcohol consumption that contributes to it. Brad Carter, how many people who are thrown into the jail, what percentage of them have alcohol as part of the problem? Have there been any studies?
It's an overwhelming percentage. You're talking about not just the OWIs, but where alcohol is a contributing factor.
Alcohol a contributing factor.
It's going to be somewhere in the 80-90%.
80-90%. We've got a not dissimilar state right next to us, Minnesota. Same size as Wisconsin. They have 8,000 people in their county jails. We have 22,000. Why the discrepancy? What's the difference?
You know, I've heard that a number of times, and to be honest with you, I've never heard an acceptable answer. I really couldn't tell you. I do think there are some discrepancies with how they count their data and what they count as jail and what they count as prison. So I don't know the answer. They have more population than we do, and all the reports that you get say that they have significantly less people in their prison population.
Keith?
Some of the things that I've heard is that Minnesota doesn't have such a strong cultural background of alcohol that Wisconsin people had. We had Miller Brewery and all the other little towns that had breweries, and there's just much more cultural support for alcohol in Wisconsin than there ever was in Minnesota, is some of the reasonings that I've heard.
In terms of the amount of heavy drinking that goes on in Marathon County, how do we rate compared to the rest of Wisconsin and compared to the rest of the United States?
We're high in relation to the rest of Wisconsin, and Wisconsin's high in relation to the rest of the nation. There isn't any doubt about those statistics. We are high in terms of binge drinking.
How can you turn a culture around? How can you turn it around overnight?
Well, first of all, you can't. You can't turn it around overnight. You're talking about a commitment of decades to make a change like this. You do it with education. You do it with people being aware of what they're doing. You know, when they have children at home for Thanksgiving, and Thanksgiving involves the Lions game and a lot of beer, and you go back to your own family history, and you see how much pain has been associated with alcohol. Everyone knows someone who died from it. I've asked this at many service organizations. People say, well, why don't they just quit drinking? This is a common question. I said, has anybody known anybody who was so ill from alcohol use that they died? And no one has ever said they did not. that in any organization I've been to. And I said, if that's not enough motivation, what would be?
Keith, how do the other members of the county board relate to this issue and the fact that it's such a contributing factor to jail overcrowding?
Well, it's a high concern for every supervisor, and I think they hear it in their own districts. And like I said, at one time before this big downturn in the economy, there was a concern or interest in basically trying to find money to design a new jail. That's why there was an option with WASA created about 4 or 5 years ago to expand this jail, possibly in the city of WASA. So you know there was a movement at that time to expand. Mm-hmm. But since this big economic downturn, I don't hear a lot of people even trying to tell Brad or urge Brad to put jail design money in the next budget. There was none in last year's budget. The money is just not there.
How has the economic downturn affected the money coming into the county? Okay. Brad, you've got a handle on
that. Let me describe. First of all, the county budget is $150 million. And most people think that most of that comes from the property taxes, but only a third does. Another 10% comes from our cut of the state sales tax, and 60% comes from state revenues. So let me just tell you how this works. The state revenues last year came in about the same as they were the year before, but a lot of our costs went up. For the first time in history, the equalized value of all of Marathon County, meaning the value of all the properties combined, went down. Just a small percentage, but it's going to go down a bigger percentage this year because home sales and property sales values are down. And the sales tax is down about $1 million.
So you guys have to cut costs.
Well, we do.
Here's an obvious idea. You've got 38 county board members. Wood County reduced the size of its board from 38 to 19 members. And Brad, I'm not going to ask you to weigh in on this, but Keith Langenhahn, aren't there too many of you supervisors?
It all depends how you look at it. I'm very active with the National Association of Counties, and that's like 2,300 counties across the nation. And some county boards have three people, some have five, and some have seven. Wisconsin traditionally has large boards, but we operate more as a citizen legislature. And those counties that have the very small boards have a lot of citizen members serving on committees, and end up paying them per diems and mileage and all those kind of things. They aren't volunteers. So in the long run, these three, five, or seven probably have salaries in the $100,000 bracket. And that's because they basically have a position that is highly competitive. They have to run a real strong campaign every 4 years, just like our state.
But I don't think anybody's saying cut it to three or four people. Cut it down to 19 instead of 38.
And that's a possibility. Wood County did it, and had a meeting yesterday with a couple Wood County supervisors, and because of a recent editorial that showed up in our local paper, they were re-energized on the whole issue, and they said we wouldn't save a penny, and they'd be glad to come up and talk to our board by cutting the board size. So I guess I'm interested in hearing from some of them. I know their board chair has told me numerous times in the last couple months that we wouldn't save money, and I guess we'd like to hear from them as to why their smaller board hasn't saved them any money, and maybe that needs to get out to some of our people that are promoting this.
One of the things that we talked about during the first half hour was the need to rebrand the county, attract young professionals, and pave the way for a brighter economic future. Without getting into all the details, Brad, are you optimistic that that is something that's going to happen?
It is going to happen.
It is going to happen.
It's going to happen. There are so many people, so many high-quality people who've now adopted that as its target. I think they realize that they carry on a legacy of people who came before them, and I don't have any doubt that that's going to happen.
And what a perfect time to do it, because as the country recovers, why not be at the forefront? And this is the most perfect time to put some efforts forward and brand this area and bring new businesses here. So it's perfect timing.
Keith Longenhahn, he is the chairman of the Marathon County Board of Supervisors. Brad Karger, the Marathon County Administrator. Gentlemen, thank you both for being with us today. And thanks also to our executive producer, Rick Ryer. Our on-air producers, Jane Ritger and Mary Baldwin. Our online producer, Scott Clark. And thanks, as always, to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. A reminder that you can follow our adventures now on Route 51 on both Facebook and Twitter. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Next Thursday, Route 51 looks at the growing rate of suicide in Wisconsin. We'll examine some of the reasons behind the disturbing statistics, and we'll talk to some local people who are on the front lines of suicide prevention. Route 51 Regional Talk Radio is heard every Thursday at 5 on the Ideas Network stations WLBL 91.9 FM Wausau, WLBL 930 AM Auburndale Stevens Point, WHBM 90.3 FM Park Falls, and WHRM 90.9 FM Wausau, High Definition Channel 3. Thanks again for riding with us today. Until next week, we are heading out of town.